We're in Judges chapter 19. We're talking about a man who has a concubine wife. He is from the land of Ephraim, and his concubine wife goes down to Bethlehem to her father's house, and he eventually goes down to get her to bring her back home. It says specifically in the Hebrew in chapter 19, verse 1, that she is a concubine wife. So it uses the word wife. And her father, her father down in Bethlehem keeps trying to keep the man and his concubine wife from returning to Ephraim, using the argument of don't drink and ride. So he stayed day after day after day, and then finally the man says, no, I'm taking my wife and we're going home. So they've come from Bethlehem to the area of Jerusalem, which is only, 5 miles? It's not a very long way, except back in those days, how did they get there? They walked or rode a donkey. So to them, 5 miles is a long way. But Jerusalem, or it's called Jebus back in those days, is a pagan city. It's not a Jewish city. So they bypass it, and they come just past Jebus to a place where it's an Israelite town in the area of Benjamin. The place is called Gibeah. Today it's a northern suburb of Jerusalem, but back in those days it was in its own government, its own area. It was just the town of Gibeah, but it was an Israeli town, and that's where they want to stay. So the man and his concubine wife come to Gibeah, and back in those days, it was an honor to have a traveler stay at your house. But here at Gibeah, there was nobody willing to open up their house. Even though the man offered, I'll pay all our own food, all our own expenses, won't cost you anything, there's no one willing to show common decency to a stranger, as would customarily have been done in those days. So he comes across an old man who's from Ephraim, just like he is, who happens to be residing in Gibeah for a short period of time. He's explaining to the man that we're out here in the city square because no one will take us in, even though we've offered to pay our own expenses. And that's where we come into verse 20, which is our starting point for today. It says, and the old man said, peace be with you, or in Hebrew, shalom aleichem. That's just a standard greeting. It means may the peace of the Lord fall upon you. He says, however, let all your needs be my responsibility, meaning at my expense. I don't want you to pay for your food, the animal's food, or anything that you need. Let it be at my expense. That was more what the traditional custom would have been of the time. And he says, only do not spend the night in the open square. The man from Ephraim would consider it an offense to allow a stranger to spend the night in the open square. And in the town of Gibeah, as we're going to find, it wasn't safe to do that. It was not safe at all. Please remember that at the time these events take place in Judges chapter 19, there is no king in Israel. And the scripture says every man did what was right in his own eyes. Whenever I teach this portion of Judges, I get a lot of emails with people saying, how come what they did there was right? The answer is, it wasn't. It wasn't. People go, well, if it's in the Bible, it must be right. No. Sometimes the Bible gives us examples of how people did things terribly wrong. And this is one of those. So in verse 21, it says, so he brought him into his house and gave fodder to the donkeys. What's fodder? Food. Hay. Yeah. And they washed their feet. That was common to do to a visitor to your home, was to wash their feet, and ate and drank. Verse 22, as they were enjoying themselves, suddenly certain men of the city, that is of the city of Gibeah, And it says certain men, because the whole city was not like this. But certain men of this city, perverted men, they're homosexuals. It says surrounded the house and beat on the door. Does it make you think of Sodom and Gomorrah? It should. The difference between Gibeah and Sodom and Gomorrah, and why Sodom and Gomorrah were totally destroyed and Gibeah is not totally destroyed, is with Gibeah, it's not everybody. It's just a limited number, a certain number. So they beat on the door. They spoke to the master of the house, the old man, saying, "Bring out the man who came to your house that we may know him carnally." What does the Bible say about homosexuality? Let's remind ourselves. Go back to Leviticus chapter 18. Leviticus chapter 18.
You said they are perverted men.
Yes, perverted men. They are homosexuals. Leviticus chapter 18. One thing that really riles me is I see a lot of church signs that say Jesus never said anything about homosexuality. Let's read Leviticus chapter 18 and remember who wrote it. This was our Messiah Yeshua, who is the Lord from time eternity past, who wrote this. Leviticus chapter 18 verse 22 says, "You shall not lie with a male as with a woman. It is an abomination." When you see that word abomination, that means it's a sin that is highly offensive to God. It's as offensive to God as idolatry. So in Leviticus chapter 20, God gives us what is the penalty for homosexuality. It's in Leviticus chapter 20, verse 13.
Death.
Yeah, that's it. Leviticus chapter 20, verse 13. "If a man lies with a male as he lies with a woman, both of them have committed an abomination, they shall surely be put to death. Their blood shall be upon them." When you see a word like surely in the scripture, there is no word surely in the Hebrew. What it means is there is an infinitive of emphasis in the sentence. So it would literally read, "Dying they shall die." And it means there is no appeal. There is no alternative. Hey, just give me 2 years in a federal pen. It's death. And it says their blood shall be upon them, meaning they're responsible for their own deaths. So that's the situation. The men of Gibeah, some of them have knocked on the door and said, "We want to have carnal relations with the man that came to your house." Verse 23, "But the man, the master of the house, went out to them and said to them, 'No, my brethren, exclamation mark. I beg you, do not act so wickedly.'" Wickedly. What does the word wickedly mean? Sinful, contrary to the commandments, statutes, and judgments of God. So he goes out to remind them that you are the children of Israel. You know the Ten Commandments as well as all the commandments, statutes, and judgments of God. And God said, "Thou shalt not do this." It says, "Seeing this man has come into my house, do not commit this outrage." So we read in these verses that it's perversion, that it's wickedness, and that it's an outrage. So the men say, "Okay, and go home." No, they don't. So verse 24, he goes on to say, "Look, here is my virgin daughter." I mean, she's available to be married. Any of you guys that want to be married, she's marriageable. It says, "Here's in the man's concubine. If you want to have sex with somebody, try a woman." He says, "Let me bring them out now. Humble them and do with them as you please. But to this man, do not do such a vile thing." This is where people send me emails to say, why was it right for him to send them out? The answer is he doesn't send them out. He offers to send them out, and what he's doing is not right. Is it right to send one person out to be ravaged over another? The answer is no. But that's what God's trying to illustrate in Judges, to why Israel keeps getting attacked by outsiders. What did God say? If Israel will be obedient to God, then they will not be harassed by enemies outside the kingdom. But if they turn against God and against his commandments, then they will be. And they're just illustrating here what it means by each man did what was right in his own eyes. Verse 25, but the men would not heed him, meaning they say no. We don't want any women. We only want the man. It says, so the man took his concubine and brought her out to them. This guy turns my tummy big time. It says, and they knew her and abused her all night until morning. And when the day began to break, they let her go. When the day began to break, in other words, when it's light enough to tell who is committing such heinous offenses, then they let her go and flee. The fact that they let her go indicates that they didn't intend to kill her. That wasn't their purpose. What they did was great offenses against God. The reason the man offends me so much is, let's keep reading. Then a woman came as the day was dawning and fell down at the door of the man's house where her master was until it was light. When her master arose in the morning, while she's being abused and killed, he's having a good night's sleep, apparently unconcerned about what's happening to her. Is this right? No. But when her master arose in the morning and opened the doors of the house and went out to go his way, there was his concubine fallen at the door of the house with her hands on the threshold. Meaning if anybody had gone out to check on her, they might have been able to get her medical attention and she might have lived. But he didn't have apparently any concern for her whatsoever. And he said to her, get up and let us be going. Get up and let us be going. But there was no answer. Why? Because she's dead. So the man lifted her onto the donkey, and the man got up and went to his place. In other words, he continues the journey home with his dead concubine wife laying lifeless across the donkey. When he entered his house, what's that?
The concubine was not treated. There's no value with the concubine, even before and even now.
I'm sorry, there's no what?
So it's like, since she was dead at the door, it's like she was not treated good being a concubine. So even the concubine before, now we know that they are not treated well, especially now.
We know this lady was not treated well. But again, the scripture says there was no king in Israel. Each man did what was right in his own sight. And God's trying to show us the kinds of horrible things that took place in Israel when there was no king.
And she had left him in the beginning. He had to go get her and bring her back.
Yeah, all that is true. Does not excuse his conduct or theirs. No, not a bit. And what he does next is again even more offensive. Pretending that he cared about her in the first place. Verse 29 says, when he entered his house, he took a knife, laid hold of his concubine, and divided her into 12 pieces, limb by limb, and sent her throughout all the territory of Israel. And he's going to send a piece to each of the other tribes to say, look what has been done to me and how offended I am over the way I was treated down in Benjamin. Why doesn't he just go to the king and ask for justice? There is no king. Why doesn't he go to the court and plead for justice? There are no courts. And so it was that all who saw it said, no such deed has been done or seen from the day that the children of Israel came up from the land of Egypt until this day. Consider it, confer, and speak up. In other words, what do we do? How do we respond? This is a horrible crime that's been committed. But there's no king, there's no court. How do we get justice? What should we do? And here we come to chapter 20, verse 1. So all the children of Israel came out from Dan to Beersheba. Dan is absolutely in the north, up at Mount Hermon. Beersheba is in the south, down in the Negev Desert. So it's the entire land of Israel on the west side of the Jordan River. And goes on the next clause, as well as from the land of Gilead. That's the 2.5 tribes on the east side of the Jordan River. So all 12 tribes are absolutely incensed at what the Benjamites in the town of Gibeah have done. It says, in a congregation gathered together as one man, meaning with one accord, with one opinion, that this cannot happen in the land of Israel. We cannot tolerate conduct like this. So they gathered together as one man before the Lord at Mizpah, which is about 8 miles north of Jerusalem. So he didn't travel very far.
They're offended that
they wanted to commit these acts of homosexuality and that instead raped this woman all night long until she was dead. That's what they're upset about. That Benjamin... What about the guy that cut her up? He's not the one they're mad at. He's mad at the ones that murder her.
And this was happening even now.
But our study is back in Judges. Let's concentrate on it. Verse 2.
And the what verse you are reading now? I thought we are in verse 4.
No, we're in Judges chapter 20, verse 2. And the leaders of all the people, all the tribes of Israel, presented themselves in the assembly of the people of God, 400,000 foot soldiers who drew the sword. How many? 400,000 have come together with swords to go take vengeance on Benjamin. How large is the tribe of Benjamin? It's the smallest of the tribes. It's a little area. So this just shows the outrage that the children of Israel have that there is a tribe of their brethren that would do this. This is absolutely heinous. Absolutely. Verse 3, now the children of Benjamin heard that the children of Israel had gone up to Mizpah. Why wasn't Benjamin invited to come? Because they're the ones who committed the offense. It says, then the children of Israel said, tell us, how did this wicked deed happen? So the Levite, the husband of the woman who was murdered, answered and said, my concubine and I went into Gibeah, which belongs to Benjamin, to spend the night. And the men of Gibeah rose against me and surrounded the house at night because of me. They intended to kill me, but instead they ravished my concubine so that she died. So I took hold of my concubine, cut her in pieces, and sent her throughout all the territory of the inheritance of Israel, because they committed lewdness and outrage in Israel. We've seen that word lewdness before, 3 times before this in the scripture. Let's look and see what the word lewdness means. Go back to Leviticus chapter 18. Leviticus chapter 18, verse 17. Leviticus chapter 18, verse 17. You shall not uncover the nakedness of a woman and her daughter, nor shall you take her son's daughter or her daughter's daughter to uncover her nakedness. They're near of kin to her. It is wickedness, but this word wickedness is the same word as lewdness. The same Hebrew word, they just translated it differently. So lewdness refers to these kinds of sexual misconduct acts that are so shocking to the conscience. We find the word again in Leviticus 19, verse 29. Do not prostitute your daughter to cause her to be a harlot, lest the land fall into harlotry and the land become full of wickedness. That's lewdness. Lewdness. So putting your daughters out there on the street as prostitutes is lewdness. Sexual immorality that ought never to be seen among any people that considers themselves God's people. And third place we see it prior to this is Leviticus chapter 20, verse 14. If a man marries a woman and her mother, it is wickedness, that's lewdness. They shall be burned with fire, both he and they, that there may be no lewdness or wickedness among you. So you see, the word lewdness refers to not just sexual immorality like adultery and fornication, but to the kinds of sexual immorality that just are abominable, that just turn your stomach. And that's what he's talking about here. But you know what? In verses 5 and 6, nowhere does this Levite man tell of his role. How he was the one that pushed her out the door and said, hey, why don't you have her instead? Why do you suppose he doesn't tell that part? Does he know what he did was wrong? Yeah, but he doesn't want to suffer any punishment for his role. So verse 7 of Judges 20 says, look, all of you are children of Israel. Give your advice and counsel here and now. So he says, you're assembled from the 12 tribes of Israel. What do you think should be done about these heinous offenses, this lewdness, this wickedness? So all the people arose as one man saying, none of us will go to his tent, nor will any turn back to his house. But now this is the thing which we will do to Gibeah. We will go up against it by lot. In other words, they realize 400,000 men are not necessary to go execute judgment against Benjamin. So they're going to draw lots for it. Verse 10. We will take 10 men out of every 100 throughout all the tribes of Israel. 100 out of every 1,000 and 1,000 out of every 10,000 to make provisions for the people that when they come to Gibeah and Benjamin, they may repay all the vileness that they have done in Israel. So if you take 10% of 400,000, they're going to send 40,000. A more reasonable sized army to march on Benjamin. But remember, Benjamin's their brother. These are their relatives that have been fighting with them in other battles. And it's not the entire tribe. It's not even the entire city. It's just a few perverted men, as it said back in verse 22. Verse 11. So all the men of Israel were gathered against the city, united together as one man. Then the tribes of Israel sent men through all the tribe of Benjamin, saying, what is this wickedness that has occurred among you? Now therefore, deliver up the men. See, they recognize it's not everybody. So give up the men for justice. Therefore, deliver up the men, the perverted men who are in Gibeah, that we may put them to death and remove the evil from Israel. But what? But the children of Benjamin would not listen to the voice of their brethren, the children of Israel. In other words, they tolerate the sin. They don't care that it happened. They don't care that there are members of their brethren that have done such a thing. What happens when we turn a blind eye to sin?
Judgment.
Judgment.
There is always death, even now, Pastor.
Yes.
Men like this, and when they sin, all I know right away, they will die, not immediately, but one day.
Turn up to the book of...
Death is the punishment of all kinds of sin, all I know.
Yep, turn up to the book of Romans, chapter 1. Romans chapter 1.
Any kind of sin is death.
Romans chapter 1. Start in verse 28. Well, we'll start in 27 since it's on topic. Verse 27 says, likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust for one another. That's what was happening in Gibeah. Men with men committing what is shameful and receiving in themselves the penalty of their error which was due. Even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, meaning they didn't care what God had to say. God gave them over to a debased mind to do those things which are not fitting. Being filled with all unrighteousness, sexual immorality, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, etc. Go down to verse 32. Who, knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death, not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them. What does God say when we turn a blind eye to sin and say, well, we don't care, you know? Let them do what they want to do and God will sort it out later. Is that what we're supposed to do?
No, he says their blood will be required at our hand.
Yep. So back to Judges chapter 20, verse 13. They tolerate the sin. Verse 14, instead the children of Benjamin gathered together from their cities to Gibeah to go to battle against the children of Israel. This is Benjamin's response. No, we won't give up the men who are guilty. We're all going to take up arms and we're going to go to war against you. Verse 15, and from their cities at that time, the children of Benjamin numbered 26,000 men who drew the sword. Besides the inhabitants of Gibeah, who numbered 700 select men. So they have 26,700 soldiers to put against the other 12 tribes, 40,000. But see that word select men, or that phrase at the end of verse 15? That means that they are experts with the sling, like the sling that David used to slay Goliath. And there are still stories written about what experts they were with this sling and how deadly accurate they could be. So verse 16, among all this people were 700 select men who were left-handed. Left-handedness characterized the tribe of Benjamin. They tended to have red hair. They were left-handed. They tended to be tall. But it says, everyone could sling a stone at a hair's breadth and not miss. A hair's breadth and not to miss. That's pretty good with a sling. Verse 17, Now besides Benjamin, the men of Israel number 400,000 men who drew the sword. All of these were men of war. That is 400,000 who were experienced soldiers. Verse 18, then the children of Israel arose and went up to the house of God to inquire of God. This was right.
Wait.
To a point. What?
Wait, but right.
To a point. They went to the house of God to inquire of God. They said, which of us shall go up first to battle against the children of Benjamin? What they should have asked is, should we go to war against Benjamin? But they didn't ask that. They just arrogantly said, which of us should be first? The Lord said, Judah first. Verse 19, so the children of Israel rose to the morning and camped against Gibeah. And the men of Israel went out to battle against Benjamin, and the men of Israel put themselves in battle array to fight against them at Gibeah. Then the children of Benjamin came out of Gibeah, and on that day cut down to the ground 22,000 men of the Israelites. Now, Benjamin has a complete and total victory. 22,000 from the 12 tribes die. How many from Benjamin? Apparently none. If you were there, what would you think about the way they approached the Lord? Maybe we acted presumptuously. Verse 22, and the people, that is the men of Israel, encouraged themselves, that is, they get their courage up, and again formed the battle line at the place where they had put themselves in array on the first day. Then the children of Israel went up and wept before the Lord until evening, and asked counsel of the Lord, saying, shall I again draw near for battle against the children of brother Benjamin? And the Lord said, go up against him. So the children of Israel approached the children of Benjamin on the second day. And Benjamin went out against them from Gibeah on the second day and cut down to the ground 18,000 more of the children of Israel, all these drew the sword. That's a total now of 40,000 from the 12 tribes that are dead. That's 10% of their total number.
Why did they all just gather around them and hit them?
All we know is what we read. Because they never asked in the first place, should we go to war against Benjamin? So watch what happens the third time. They're learning. Verse 26. Then all the children of Israel, that is all the people, wept and came to the house of God and wept. They sat there before the Lord and fasted that day until evening. Fasted. They're repenting. They're realizing that the children of Benjamin did wrong, but what about the rest of Israel? Are they living godly lives? This is the point, remember, where each man's doing what's right in his own eyes. They're not following the commandments of God. That's why they're losing on the battlefield, because God is not with them. So they spend time fasting, repenting, realizing that what they've done so far, they've been trying to do in their own power. They fasted that day until evening, and they offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. Verse 27, so the children of Israel inquired of the Lord. The Ark of the Covenant of God was there in those days, and Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, stood before it in those days, saying, shall I yet again go out to battle against the children of my brother Benjamin, or shall I cease? In other words, now we're willing to listen. Lord, what should we do? Yes, Mike.
Is that the Phinehas who threw the spear through the...
Yeah, same guy. Yeah. And the Lord said, go up, for tomorrow I will deliver them into your hand. Had the Lord said that on either of the other 2 days? No, he did not. But the Lord says, now that you've repented, now that you've fasted, now that you've decided that you care about what I have to say, go up to battle and I will be with you and you will be victorious. And it says, and the Lord said, go up, for tomorrow I will deliver them into your hand. A recognition that the battle belongs not to the one with the most swords, but to the one with God on their side. Verse 29, then Israel sent men in ambush all around Gibeah. And the children of Israel went up against the children of Benjamin on the third day. On which day? The third day. Interesting. And put themselves in battle array against Gibeah as at the other times. So the children of Benjamin went out against the people and were drawn away from the city. They began to strike down and kill some of the people as at other times. in the highways, one of which goes up to Bethel and the other to Gibeah in the field, about 30 men of Israel. In other words, when the Benjamites come out against the other tribes of Israel, the other tribes begin to run away. And Benjamin gets overconfident, thinks, aha, they're terrified of us. We have another easy victory. What's happening, though, is the army is leaving the city where they had good protection, going out into the highways where they have no protection. Verse 32, and the children of Benjamin said, they are defeated before us, as at first. But the children of Israel said, let us flee and draw them away from the city to the highways. So it's a tactical retreat. It's not out of fear, and it's not out of defeat. Verse 33, so all the men of Israel rose from their place and put themselves in battle array at Baal Tamar. Then Israel's men in ambush burst forth from their position in the plain of Geba, and 10,000 select men from all Israel came against Gibeah, and the battle was fierce. But the Benjamites did not know that disaster was upon them, and disaster is exactly right. Verse 35 says, the Lord defeated Benjamin before Israel. And the children of Israel destroyed that day 25,100 Benjamites. All these drew the sword. They only had 26,700, and 25,100 just died. What does that leave Benjamin? Less than 1,000 people. That's out of the whole tribe.
That's not of the military contingent?
That's going to be all the men who are of sufficient age and health to draw a sword. And this is just an overview. The details are given below. So verse 36. So the children of Benjamin saw that they were defeated. The men of Israel had given ground to the Benjamites because they relied on the men in ambush whom they had sent against Gibeah. And the men in ambush quickly rushed upon Gibeah. That's the city. The men in ambush spread out and struck the whole city with the edge of the sword. Not just the soldiers that came out, but the whole city. Now the appointed signal between the men of Israel and the men in ambush was that they would make a great cloud of smoke rise up from the city. How do you think they're going to make a great cloud of smoke rise up from the city of Gibeah? They're going to burn it down. So while Benjamin is chasing the other 12 tribe soldiers going farther and farther away from the city, those who laid an ambush have killed everybody in the city and set it on fire. Verse 9, whereupon the men of Israel would turn in battle. That is, when they see the great smoke, they know the city's destroyed. Now they're going to come back against the Gibeah soldiers because there's no place for them to go. They can't retreat back into the walled city. So now Benjamin had begun to strike and kill about 30 of the men of Israel, for they said, surely they're defeated before us, as in the first battle. When the cloud began to rise from the city in a column of smoke, the Benjamites looked behind them, and there was the whole city going up in smoke to heaven. And when the men of Israel turned back, so here's Benjamin looking back at the city, saying, the city's destroyed, our wives and children are dead, there's no place to go back to. Now here comes the Israelite army in full press. It says, when the men of Israel turned back, the men of Benjamin panicked, for they saw that disaster had come upon them. Therefore they turned their backs before the men of Israel in the direction of the wilderness, but the battle overtook them. Notice they're running away, not toward Gibeah, because there's no Gibeah to run to. They're just running toward the wilderness, just hoping to get away. But the Israelites were too fast, they overtake them. It says, whoever came out of the cities, they destroyed in their midst. They surrounded the Benjamites, chased them, and easily trampled them down as far as the front of Gibeah toward the east. And 18,000 men of Benjamin fell. All these were men of valor. So out of the 25,100, these are the first 18,000 to fall. Then they turned and fled toward the wilderness to the rock of Rimmon, and they cut down 5,000 of them on the highways. So that's now, what, 23,000? Then they pursued them relentlessly up to Gidom and killed 2,000 men. Now we're up to 25,000. So all who fell at Benjamin that day were 25,000 men who drew the sword. All these were men of valor. But 600 men, that's all that Benjamin has left is 600 men. But 600 men turned and fled toward the wilderness to the rock of Rimmon. And they stayed at the rock of Rimmon for 4 months. And the men of Israel turned back against the children of Benjamin and struck them down with the edge of the sword from every city, men and beasts, all who were found, meaning including women and children. They also set fire to all the cities they came to. So when they're done, 600 people are all that are left to the tribe of Benjamin. What tribe will King Saul come from? Benjamin. Right now, there's only 600 Benjamites, and they're all males. So what are we going to do now? Go ahead, Esther.
I could not get the major reason why they were killing the Benjamites.
The Benjamites had protected the men who raped and murdered the concubine wife. Rather than giving them up to justice, they said, no, we will tolerate their sin and we will tolerate them amongst us. We don't want any judgment to come to them. That's why Israel brought war against Benjamin.
I see. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. So chapter... What's that? Is there more? Nope. Okay. So chapter one is, now, unless we want Benjamin to be totally extinguished, the Benjamites need wives. What are we going to do? And there's a problem. There's a problem. There's a problem. What did the rest of Israel vow to the Lord? Chapter 21, verse 1. Now the men of Israel, that is the other tribes, had sworn an oath, that is, on the name of God. What happens when you swear an oath on the name of God? You keep it. At Mizpah, saying, none of us shall give his daughter to Benjamin as a wife. So all the other tribes have taken an oath before the Lord, saying, we will not give a single one of our daughters to Benjamin as a wife. But now that they see the complete destruction of Benjamin, they're going, now what? So verse 2, then the people came to the house of God, that's at Shiloh at this point, and remained there before God till evening. They lifted up their voices and wept bitterly and said, O Lord, the God of Israel, why has this come to pass in Israel, that today there should be one tribe missing in Israel? Well, they should realize why, because they just killed all the women and children. So there's no wives left. So verse 4, so it was on the next morning that the people rose early and built an altar there and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings. The children of Israel said, who is there among all the tribes of Israel who did not come up with the assembly of the Lord? For they had made a great oath concerning anyone who would not come up to the Lord at Mizpah, saying, he shall surely be put to death. So they made a great oath that anyone from the tribes who won't come up, they shall be put to death. So they came. Almost the entire nation came. Verse 6, and the children of Israel grieved for Benjamin their brother and said, one tribe is cut off from Israel today. If it truly is the entire nation who has taken an oath to say, we will not give a single one of our daughters to Benjamin, what is Benjamin to do? So verse 7, what shall we do for wives for those who remain, seeing we have sworn by the Lord that we will not give them our daughters as wives? And they said, what one is there from the tribes of Israel who did not come up to Mizpah to the Lord? And in fact, no one had come up to the camp from Jabesh Gilead to the assembly. Jabesh Gilead, that's part of the tribe of Manasseh. They're descended from Joseph. And from this one village, one city, no one had come up. Which means no one from Jabesh Gilead had taken part in the oath not to give their daughters to Benjamin, his wife.
But didn't the others swear an oath to kill the man anyway?
Yeah, but they've forgotten about that at the moment. Verse 9, for when the people were counted, indeed, not one of the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead was there. And of course, Joseph is Benjamin's brother. Verse 10, so the congregation sent out there 12,000 of their most valiant men and commanded them, saying, go and strike the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead with the edge of the sword, including the women and children. This is the vow that Mike just reminded me of, that they said they were going to go destroy the village, and there they go. And this is the thing that you shall do. You shall utterly destroy every male and every woman who has known a man intimately. That means that all that are left are the young maidens who are eligible to be wives. Right? And now they can't take husbands from Jabesh Gilead because they're all dead. So where will they find husbands? Let me see. Verse 12. So they found among the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead 400 young virgins who had not known a man intimately. So how many men are there left of Benjamin? 600. Here's 400 wives. It says, and they brought them to the camp at Shiloh, which is in the land of Canaan. Then the whole congregation sent word to the children of Benjamin who were at the Rock of Ramon and announced peace to them. So Benjamin came back at that time, and they gave them the women whom they had saved alive of the women of Jabesh Gilead, and yet they had not found enough for them. Most of you are good enough in math to know that 400 is less than 600, right?
That means 200 of the men of Benjamin were spared.
No, it means we have to keep reading. Oh my goodness. You realize this is on tape, right? Verse 15, the people grieved for Benjamin because the Lord had made a void in the tribes of Israel. They don't even think about their part in it. Just, oh, the Lord did this. Well, okay. Verse 16, then the elders of the congregation said, what shall we do for wives for those who remain since the women of Benjamin have been destroyed? They said, there must be an inheritance for the survivors of Benjamin that a tribe may not be destroyed from Israel. However, we cannot give, circle that word, give. We cannot give them wives from our daughters. For the children of Israel have sworn an oath saying, cursed be the one who gives a wife to Benjamin. So here's what they do, verse 19. Then they said, in fact, there is a yearly feast of the Lord in Shiloh, which is north of Bethel, on the east side of the highway that goes up from Bethel to Shechem and south of Lebanon. Therefore, they instructed the children of Benjamin, saying, go, lie in wait in the vineyards and watch. And just when the daughters of Shiloh come out to perform their dances, these were dances to say, hey, we're eligible for marriage. Anybody out there interested? Then come out from the vineyards and every man catch a wife for himself. So this is their way out. We won't give them to them. They will go capture one. And whichever one they capture, let them have.
7 wives for 7 brothers.
Yeah. Remember, this is the time when there is no king in Israel and every man did what was right in his own eyes. So they say, whichever one you catch is yours. Catch a wife for himself from the daughters of Shiloh, then go to the land of Benjamin. Then it shall be when their fathers or their brothers come to us to complain, that is, the fathers or brothers of these young women who were captured, that we will say to them, be kind to them for our sakes, because we did not take a wife for any of them in the war. For it is not as though you have given the women to them at this time, making yourselves guilty of your oath. So we'll tell our brothers, hey, you didn't break your oath. You didn't voluntarily give them. They were taken. But just let it be. And that's what happens. That's how the 600 Benjamites get wives. And then the 1,200 of them together repopulate the tribe of Benjamin, from which King Saul comes, from which Mordecai comes from the Feast of Purim, from which the Apostle Paul comes. He's a Benjamite. Verse 23, and the children of Benjamin did so. They took enough wives for their number from those who danced, whom they caught. Then they went and returned to their inheritance, and they rebuilt the cities and dwelt in them. So the Israelites' thought is, these women are dancing, trying to find husbands. Let them find husbands. Still wasn't right, but okay. Verse 24, so the children of Israel departed from there at that time, every man to his tribe and family. They went out from there, every man to his inheritance. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. It's just a reminder at the end of the chapter that God didn't say any of this was good or right. Just that this explains why Israel was in so much trouble with the Lord, because they didn't follow his commandments, they didn't follow his judgments, they didn't treat each other properly, and it caused all kinds of trouble.
They schemed to get around oaths.
And they schemed to get around oaths?
Yeah.
The children of Israel have been guilty of that ever since.
Me too.
Yeah. For instance, in the scriptures, we are told to rest on Shabbat. So from that, the children of Israel have derived a fence that says, you can't carry a load on Shabbat outside your property. So the children of Israel, what they used to do is they would tie a string all around the city of Jerusalem and say, this we consider to be our property, and therefore we can carry a load anywhere in the city of Jerusalem. So they were always looking for ways to get around God's commandments. Another example, one that goes on today. At Passover, what are we required to clean out of the house? The chametz, the leaven. And today, you go to your rabbi, pay him a fee, and he will write a bill of sale giving all of your leaven to your Gentile neighbors. And then you leave the leaven in your house and continue to take part in it, enjoy it. And at the end of Passover, he rips up the bill of sale and it's yours again. Because it wasn't your leaven. You're only required to take your leaven out of the house. Now, turn to Mark chapter 7. How does the Lord feel about evading his commandments? Mark chapter 7. Am I saying the Gentiles did any better? No. That's just not the topic at the moment. Mark chapter 7 is about a ceremonial hand washing called Netilat Yadayim. It's not about eating pigs. If you have an NIV, throw it away and get a real Bible. Okay. In Mark chapter 7, verse 6, he answered and said to them, well did Isaiah prophesy of you hypocrites. As it's written, this people honors me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. And in vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. For laying aside the commandment of God, you hold the tradition of men. So he says, instead of obeying God's commandments, you only worry about man-made rules and regulations. You can plop this right out of here and put it in the 4th century when the Catholic Church said, you can't keep Sabbath, you got to do Sunday. You can't do Passover, you got to do Easter. The Gentiles did the same thing. That's just the degenerate heart of man. Having finished the book of Judges, what do we say? Chazak, chazak, v'nish, chazek. Be strong, and may we be strengthened. For how are we strengthened as believers but by studying the Word of God? At this point, I'm going to turn off the recorder, and I'm going to turn it back on in a minute. We're going to start 1 Samuel.